From KPFK, Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. This Wednesday, members of the Los Angeles chapter of Black Lives Matter mark 2 years since they began targeting District Attorney Jackie Lacey for refusing to prosecute violent officers who have killed. Lacey became the first woman and the first African-American to ever serve in the role of DA. But in her role, Lacey has effectively protected one of the most violent police forces in the nation. As other cities slowly start to hold police more accountable for killing unarmed African-Americans, and I should add, very slowly, Los Angeles remains distinct for protecting a brutal status quo. One of the leaders of Black Lives Matter Los Angeles, who has been regularly demanding Jackie Lacey's resignation for the past 2 years, now joins me, Melina Abdullah. She is professor and chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies at California State University of Los Angeles. Welcome to the program, Melina.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
So it's been 2 years. Tell us how this all started. Lacey has been in her position for a number of years now. 2 years ago, why did Black Lives Matter LA start specifically demanding that she needs to take action or leave her position?
So basically, we never neglected the role of the DA, but we weren't actively protesting the DA. We were focused primarily on the police. But we know that what combats police violence is holding officers accountable. So we initially started trying to work with Lacey, saying, well, will you prosecute these officers? Lacey met with us a couple of times, but took no action. And we felt that that was a betrayal also of the families who were with us. So she met with Ezell Ford's mother. She met with Kendrick McDade's mother. And, you know, promised that it was something that she was interested in pursuing, but took no action. So 2 years ago, the twin sister of Keisha Michael, who was killed by Inglewood police along with Mark Quinton Sandlin, they were sleeping in their car, and Inglewood police was unable to rouse them, so they shot them to death, leaving 7 children without parents. Keisha's twin sister, Trisha Michael, who had been active in Black Lives Matter and who helped us organize an Inglewood campaign that got those 5 officers fired, said it's not enough to fire the officers because they can just go to the next policing unit, right? They can go apply for a job in LA or in Pasadena or in with the sheriffs. And so we need them prosecuted. And so Trisha Michael said, let's start protesting the DA, which was kind of a complicated decision for us because we're also abolitionists who don't believe in police or prisons. But, you know, the families helped us understand as long as there are prisons, the first ones to be in them should be the police who violate our communities. So 2 years ago, we began delivering a petition. We launched a petition asking her to prosecute killer cops. We attempted to deliver that petition on October 25th of 2017. And we were met by sheriff's deputies who met us with violence, who refused to allow us entrance into the public building, and who refused to allow us to speak with Lacey. Lacey also refused to speak with us. And so beginning on October 25th, we said, prosecute killer cops or step down. We demanded a community town hall for her to speak for her position. And initially, so 2 months in, she agreed to the town hall and then just days later reneged on it. So in January of 2018, we shifted our call from prosecute killer cops to Jackie Lacey must go and called for her resignation.
So now here we are, October 2019, a full 2 years since those protests began. Tell me what they've been like, where they've been held. Are they regular? Are they every week? Give me a sense of what these have been like.
So every single week, every single Wednesday, regardless if it's Christmas or, some other holiday, we are in front of Jackie Lacey's office. We're demanding that she step down, and we are centered on the families. So every week, families of those who've been killed by police lead that protest. So the mother of John Horton, whose son was killed 10 years ago, is there, as well as the family of Ryan Twyman, who was just killed this June, is there. And so we have families there every single week, grounding us in, reminding us why we're there. And we actively call on Jackie Lacey to step down. But we also, in that process, we always form a circle. And we begin with the pouring of libation and the calling of the names of those who've been killed. We also remember that a piece of it is also the power that we're building in community, recognizing that we don't just have to settle for the kind of so-called leadership that we're given. We're able to shift that. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 2 years. And we declare it a victory that in 2016, when Jackie Lacey ran for re-election, she ran unopposed. This time she's running for re-election in 2020, and she has four declared challengers and more slated to declare. And so we know that that alone is a victory. We see the ultimate victory as her stepping down and getting these officers prosecuted.
Can you put Los Angeles's problem of police violence into a national context? We hear often about, you know, it seems every other week there is a new killing of an unarmed Black person in America by a cop, you know, whether it's a Tatiana Jefferson in Dallas or, as you mentioned, Ryan Twyman here in Los Angeles, where you and I are based. But does Los Angeles, which has this reputation of being a diverse, liberal city, how does it compare to other cities in the U.S. on police violence?
I'm so glad you asked, because Los Angeles has this reputation of liberalism, diversity, and inclusion. But when we talk about police violence, it's the most violent locale in the country. It's not St. Louis. It's not Baltimore. It's not Dallas. It's not Fort Worth. It's Los Angeles.
The most violent.
Let me give you a number that shocks everyone. So Jackie Lacey took office in 2013, January 2013. In that time, over 550 people have been killed by police.
Wow.
550 people in the county of Los Angeles have been killed by police in the last 6 years. And so when you talk about violence, it's just extreme. And so a lot of that has to do with policies and practices carried out by LAPD, by LA County Sheriffs, but it also has a lot to do with the way in which they're in bed with the prosecutor, or the prosecutor is in bed with them when she's refusing to prosecute. And you're absolutely right. There are deaths every day. We're talking about 1,100 deaths per year on average nationally. But we're looking at, in Los Angeles, you know, upwards of 3 or 4 deaths a week, or at least one a week. When we talk about just LAPD and LA County Sheriffs, right? So you're not hearing these names in the news. So just today, someone was shot by LA County Sheriffs, or last night in the Hollenbeck Division. Just on Wednesday, there was a brother named Lazari Frazier who was killed in Sherman Oaks, who would be the Mike Brown if he got news coverage, right? Because what they did is try to kill him. A plainclothes officer killed him. And then they went back and said, oh, he stole something from a convenience store, very similar to Mike Brown, right? We have our own Sandra Bland, Waukesha Wilson, who was killed inside LAPD Metro Detention Center. So you have this combination of violent policing units, a district attorney who refuses to do her job, and also mainstream media who refuses to report on these murders anywhere else. When you talk about someone like Ryan Twyman, who we have his killing on video, unarmed, police approach the back door of his car, snatch it open. He doesn't even know that's happening. He's backing out. They shoot him 34 times, including with an assault rifle. So after they shoot him with their revolvers, they go, or their service weapons, they go back to the car and get assault rifle and kill him some more, right? That's on video, but it's not a national outrage because mainstream media has not picked up on the story, right? And so it's really important that we have outlets like yours reporting on these killings. But that's what's happening here in Los Angeles.
What about the state-level laws that have been passed under Governor Gavin Newsom that, at least on paper, claim to make it harder for police to get away with shooting people, raising the standards that a cop can justify shooting someone? Have those made a difference? Do you see those as victories, or are they, putting lipstick on a pig, if you will?
So SB 1421 was the first bill that Black Lives Matter ever co-sponsored, right? Mm-hmm. And that bill was the police transparency bill, trying to get access to the records of these officers. And SB 1421 went into place in January of this year. We filed a whole bunch of Public Records Act requests on behalf of the families. But policing units like LA County Sheriffs are refusing to turn over that information despite the law. And so we'll be serving them with a lawsuit very shortly. We see it as a victory in a sense. It's a new tool, but it's not something that has really rolled back the murders of our people at the hands of police. The other bill that you mentioned, AB 392, Black Lives Matter, began as a co-sponsor and then pulled off the bill because we didn't see it as going far enough. And one reason that we can say that is that anytime you have the policing unions saying that they're okay with the bill, then you know the bill is not really doing very much. That doesn't mean that we're not hopeful. So many of our partners like ACLU, Anti-Police Terror Project, and others did stay on the bill because they hoped it would be a tool at least in litigation. So our fingers are crossed, but the jury's still out on that one.
So with these 2 years of protests facing Jackie Lacey, what do you hope will happen now? This is a very long, long-term protest. This is something that Black Lives Matter Los Angeles, which is now, 6 years old, has taken on as a central issue. Do you feel that it's made any kind of a difference?
We do feel like it's made a difference. So these protests, we have to remember that protests work. The only thing that doesn't work is stopping the protest. So protests work, engaging, standing up, it works. And so we can think of all kinds of examples of our victory. So we talked about the firing of the 5 officers who killed Keisha and Mark Quinton, right? We know that we have the Jackie Lacey protests in particular. We have almost 2/3 of organized labor that endorsed her in both 2012 and 2016 has refused to endorse her this run, right? We have 4 declared candidates against her where there were no candidates against her, no opposition in 2016. We have hundreds of people coming out. On Wednesday, we anticipate at least 1,000 folks showing up to protest Jackie Lacey. And so we think that it also feeds into kind of a national narrative. There's a national movement now to say that no candidate for any office that receives the endorsement of police associations or what they call unions should receive the support of Black people. So there's a national movement there. We have a new national effort focusing specifically on the role of DAs called Real Justice PAC, which Patrice Cullors, who's one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, is the West Coast director of. And so we're looking at new DA candidates who are talking about police accountability. We can think about what Marilyn Mosby in Baltimore is attempting to do again, right? Candidates like there's a candidate, Aria Jones in Houston, Harris County DA, who's talking explicitly and specifically about police accountability. And so we believe, we know that we're making an impact. Is it moving always as rapidly as we'd like? Absolutely not. Because if we had what we wanted, every single officer who killed someone would stand trial.
And then you wouldn't be protesting Jackie Lacey.
Exactly. We have other things we'd like to do with our Wednesday afternoons. But we see this as our sacred duty. Standing up is our duty.
What about the arrest of Ed Buck, the Democratic donor who for several years had essentially gotten away with drugging and allegedly killing queer black men, and who Jackie Lacey basically refused to prosecute until very recently.
Right. I'm glad you lifted that up. So we have been part of the protests against Ed Buck. So Ed Buck, a wealthy white donor, political donor, had had a pattern. He was a serial killer. So he basically would stalk, prey upon, drug, and then kill through overdoses black gay men, beginning with Jamel Moore in 2017. In 2017, we, along with organizers like Jasmine Canick, said if Ed Buck is not prosecuted, he will have another victim. We'll expect more black bodies. And then in 2018, Timothy Dean was killed in that same apartment in the same way Jamel was. Thankfully, in 2019, a third victim survived Buck's actions. And that's where we did get a prosecution. But remember, the Jamel Moore killing and Timothy Dean killing are not being prosecuted by Jackie Lacey. They're being prosecuted through the federal court system. So we see that as a victory that they, you know, sometimes it's, you don't get the target to act, but you can get other actors to act.
And in fact, that shows exactly how that shows up Jackie Lacey even more in her refusal to act.
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely.
Why do you think this intelligent, pioneering African-American woman, the first of her demographic in that position, has protected cops so much? She might as well say Blue Lives Matter.
Well, I mean, we have to remember Zora Neale Hurston's words, all skin folk ain't kin folk. And I think that, you know, there are sometimes black faces on white supremacy. And that's what we see with Jackie Lacey. You used the term pioneering, which would normally, get under my skin, right? Especially sure. if we think about where that word comes from and us being on yes. stolen land of indigenous people. But it applies to Jackie Lacey, right? She is acting in a in very much the same way in advancing white supremacy. We also have to remember that she is a protege of Steve Cooley. She's not progressive. She's not someone that's deeply rooted in black progressive politics. She's someone who happens to be black, who sees her personal advancement as more important than the empowering of the black community and the freedom of the black community.
I'd never thought about the word pioneering that way, and I'm so appreciative that you pointed that out to me. So I thank you for that, Melina. How can people get involved, especially those of among our audience in the Los Angeles area, if they hear this in time for the Wednesday protest? But I'm assuming also there will be continued protest every other Wednesday till Jackie Lacey leaves. Do you encourage people to show up at these protests?
Absolutely. And let me be real clear. This is a protest. It's serious. We're talking about the lives of people who've been stolen. But we also believe in what Martin Luther King talks about in the building of beautiful, of a beautiful struggle and a beloved community. So, you know, we have a white ally, Adam, who's there every week with his 2 and 3 year old children. And, you know, this is how they've been raised. So more than, you know, the majority of their lives, they've been standing with us, chanting, "Jackie Lacey must go." I have my children out there. We draw with chalk sometimes. We play music. We love on each other, right? So if you think about these families that are there, you know, sometimes they need our love and support. And so that's the kind of circle that we build outside of Lacey's office, even as we chant with all of our might that she has to go. And so we want everybody to come out on Wednesdays at 4 o'clock at 211 West Temple. Wednesdays at 4 o'clock at 211 West Temple. And people can follow us on social media. On Twitter, we're at BLMLA. And on Instagram, we're at BLM Los Angeles. If you're not in Los Angeles, there's similar fights happening everywhere from Sacramento to Dallas to many other places. So please get involved in struggles for justice in your community. if you're not in Los Angeles. But if you're in Los Angeles, come downtown every Wednesday from 4 to 6.
Finally, Melina, do you feel that there has been a small measure of progress nationally? We talked about some of the successes of BLM LA locally, but in the broad scheme of things, you know, for example, in places like Dallas, Texas, and even other parts of the country where you have DAs like Marilyn Mosby in Baltimore, do you feel that Black Lives Matter, through its number of years now being active, has changed the conversation on police killings of Black Americans?
Yes, absolutely. Black Lives Matter has shifted the entire narrative. When you think about everything from being able to say that we are unapologetically Black, and advocating specifically for Black interests, because when Black people get free, everybody gets free, right? That's a narrative that other folks are picking up on. That's why we have awakenings even in non-Black communities, organizations like White People for Black Lives. So that awakening to the need for contemporary Black radical struggle is a tremendous victory. The idea that people are being killed by police, and that's something that we have to fight. You know, that's something that we didn't invent, right? We can go all the way back to, you know, the anti-lynching movement to talk about this. But in contemporary times, we kind of not pay too much attention to the way that institutions are built deliberately to produce these outcomes, not in mass, at least. And so Black Lives Matter has shifted that. We've also kind of this whole idea of abolitionism, that we can live in a world where public safety is completely reimagined, where we think about, if we think about, you raised the name of Tatiana Jefferson, and I feel for the neighbor who called for the wellness check, right? But what's lifted is that, you know, we can't call the police, that there are other ways of bringing safety to our communities and building Black community. Building community that relies on each other is essential to our freedom. So that's something that this abolitionist frame has pushed, as well as, you know, let's stop spending on new prisons that lock people up. And so if we think about, you know, canceling that new jail in Los Angeles County, that was a tremendous victory that we didn't know that we would win, but we won. And so we have a saying in our movement, when we fight, we win. And that's always been the truth, and it continues to be the truth. And we think that that's something else that we've been successful in kind of embedding in folks, that there is a fight that needs to be had and won.
Melina, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
Melina Abdullah is active in the Los Angeles chapter of Black Lives Matter, and she's a professor and chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies at Cal State University in Los Angeles. We've been discussing the 2-year anniversary of protests against LADA Jackie Lacey. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.